eagerness.
Ashrukala.
Tears rolled down.
Akshasya.
Of the eyes. Vidhi.
Within my heart.
Asid.
Appeared.
May.
My.
Shanai.
Without delay.
Harihi.
The personality of Godhead.
Translation. As soon as I began to meditate upon the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, with my mind transformed in transcendental love, tears rolled down my eyes, and without delay, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, appeared on the lotus of my heart. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word bhava is significant here. This bhava stage is attained after one has transcendental affection for the Lord. The first initial stage is called shraddha, or a liking for the Supreme Lord. And in order to increase that liking, one has to associate with pure devotees of the Lord. The third stage is to practice the prescribed rules and regulations of devotional service. This will dissipate all sorts of misgivings and remove all personal deficiencies that hamper progress in devotional service. When all misgivings and personal deficiencies are removed, there is a standard faith in transcendental matter, and the taste for it increases in greater proportion. This stage leads to attraction, and after this there is bhava, or the prior stage of unalloyed love for God. All the above different stages are but different stages of development of transcendental love. Being so surcharged with transcendental love, there comes a strong feeling of separation, which leads to 8 different kinds of ecstasies. Tears from the eyes of a devotee is an automatic reaction. And because Sri Narad Muni, in his previous birth, attained that stage very quickly after his departure from home, it was quite possible for him to perceive the actual presence of the Lord, which he tangibly experienced by his developed spiritual senses without material tinge. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namne Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Sunyavari Paschacha De Satarane Omang Gyanam Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksuru Miritam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Bacha Patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Just give me one second here. I wanted to find a text which I where did I put it? So, dhyayantas charanam buddha, thus meditating. So, he describes how you're traveling went out into the wilderness, far beyond there was where he was. There was no people there. He was alone, hungry, thirsty, tired, but took a bath in the lake, and his fatigue was relieved. And then he sat down under a pipala tree and began to meditate on the super soul in the way he had been taught. So now, dhyantaha, jhana is meditation, dhyayataha, on the lotus feet, charana ambuja, and Prabhupada says in the word for word, localized, meaning super soul. He's particularly seeing the four-armed super soul in the heart. Bhava nirjitta. So his mind was overcome, overwhelmed by bhava. And that, Prabhupada discusses this in his purport. This is actually a well-marked stage in the development, and Prabhupada outlines this development beginning with Shraddha all the way up to Prema, step by step. So this is Bhava. The next verse is Prema. Bhava is the second from last stage, penultimate stage, and then the final stage is, the ultimate stage is Prema. So he comes very quickly, I must say, to this Bhava stage. So all his chetasa, his mental activities, thinking, feeling, willing, utkantya, there was a sense of extreme eagerness. That is the eagerness to see the Lord, you might say an obsession. The physical symptoms, ashru, the tears in the eyes, spontaneously, they spring from the eyes. And the Lord appeared in my heart. He saw the Lord in the heart directly. So this is the description here. So then Prabhupada says this word bhava is significant. Bhava, it means, actually, if you look it up in a Sanskrit diction, which I'll do right now, the general meaning with a long A, bhava, I mean bhava, short A is existence, but bhava is a state of being in general. Bhava is existence, so bhava is a certain state of existence, a manner of being, a character in general, and then also becomes a way of thinking or feeling, and then an emotion. So these are all the general sense of the words bhava. So these words are used in a very particularly technical way. And so there's a verse which Prabhupada has in mind here. I'm sure most of you know this verse. It's in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And then quoted in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita in the Madhya Lila. And here these stages are given. Prabhupada also quotes this verse in one of the purports in the Bhagavad Gita. So this begins Adau. Adau means at the beginning there is Shraddha. And the first initial stage, Prabhupada says, is called Shraddha. Or a liking for the Supreme Lord, some preliminary attraction. It begins with some shraddha, some faith, but then as you develop, that shraddha gets stronger and stronger and stronger. But in the beginning, here he says, an initial liking for the Supreme Lord. Somehow or other, you hear the Hare Krishna mantra and you like it. Or you see a picture of Krishna and you like it. Or you are just some interested in what the devotees are doing, you go and see. This is the shraddha. Enough to at least make an appearance. to be there. So ado shraddha. It begins with this liking. Usually that material life is not satisfying to you, and then the spiritual life may be interesting in this way. So then it says tata thereafter, associating with pure devotees of the Lord. After shraddha is sadhu sangaha. That shraddha is goes on, you'll come back and you'll spend time with the devotees. This is sadhu sangha. And if that is fruitful, then the next stage will be, as you say, to practice the prescribed rules and regulations of devotional service. Bhajana Kriya. That's what this means. And when Prabhupada translates this in the Nectar of Devotion, for Bhajana Kriya, he says, surrendering to the spiritual master and being encouraged by the association of devotees so that initiation takes place. So this is, Bhajana Kriya means you agree to practice, you decide to really practice Krishna consciousness under guidance. And initiation means, you know, the word initiation means begin. You've already begun to some extent, but eventually, if you want to become serious, you make a commitment. You make a commitment. Just like if you may study on your own, but then you really want to learn something, you enroll in a university, and then you say, okay, now I have to meet these requirements to get a degree, and so on. There's some kind of commitment, there's some kind of vow. I will study my books, I will attend classes, and so on. So it's a natural process. It's a kind of apprenticeship in Krishna consciousness, where you, just like the system is there, you want to learn a trade, there's a master, you come, you want to learn how to be a metal worker, anything. You know, the old system was, you'd go, I guess maybe still is practicing somewhat in Europe, but you become an apprentice and you stay in the workshop and you learn the trade, and then you become a journeyman, and then you become a master yourself as you learn this. So Krishna consciousness also is a practical application. There's the philosophy, but there's a way to cultivate. There are many people in different religious traditions who don't really cultivate it. It's haphazard. They're more like not professionals but amateurs, in the sense that it. But this is the path to take. So then if one wants to become really serious, and therefore this initiation means now you're taking vows, you have a teacher, you're going to stay with the association of devotees. Lord Chaitanya was asked, what is the characteristic what is the characteristic feature? How do we know a devotee? And he says, asat sanga tyaga e vaishnava chara. The characteristic behavior of devotee is asat sanga tyaga, has given up the association of materialistic people. And then describes what that means, associating with the opposite sex for sense gratification, or with, well, it's from the male point of view, associating with women for sense gratification, or with men who are attracted to women for that that purpose. So this is when you have sadhu sangha, associating with devotees, and gradually also you give up the association of materialistic people, because you'll become affected by their mentalities. You associate with saintly persons, you'll become like them, and you associate with materialistic people, you'll become like that. So there's this bhajana kriya, this is the practice of devotional service. And after that, how does he say it here? The third stage is to practice the prescribed rules and regulations of devotional service. This will dissipate all misgivings and remove all personal deficiencies that hamper progress in devotional service. This stage is called anartha nirvritti. The removal of anartha means, in Sanskrit, artha means something that's valuable. Sometimes it just means money. But an anartha is something that you don't want. Artha is something that's desirable. So what you don't want, nirvritti, it starts to go away. That is to say, sins, offenses, doubts, anything that hampers the progress of devotional service, it will start to go away. This means one is cultivating, in our case we're cultivating the Sankirtan, the holy name of the Lord, and we should see that in the process, that for example, lust and greed and anger start to go away. We start to become purified. If that doesn't happen, then we're doing something wrong. So in our case, it means that we chant the holy name while trying to give up offenses. In describing this stage, it's mentioned that there are three platforms of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. There is the offensive stage, clearing stage, and pure stage. And so anartha nirvritti is at least in the clearing stage of chanting. In the stage where I'm committing offenses against the holy name, and I just go on and do it, I don't try to do anything about it, then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, then the holy name is not much better than letters of the alphabet. You don't make much progress. But when I'm chanting, I'm not in the pure stage at all, but I'm clearing, the offenses are going away. I'm trying to become offenseless. Then this is called the clearing stage. And the pure name is called Shuddhanam. The pure name is not manifest, because the pure name is identical with Krishna. When the pure name appears, these kind of symptoms will be there, tears, hair standing on end. That's when the pure, but But what before then is when I'm just trying to give up offenses, then what appears is called nam abhasa. The word abhasa sometimes means reflection, like the reflection of light in a mirror, or the projection of light into darkness. The sun is shining. We can't see it, but the sunlight's in the room. That light that comes into a dark place is called abhasa also, or the light that I see in a mirror. It's indirect light, abhasa. So the Namacharya Haridas Thakur is describing in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll find a place where he is talking, addressing a group of brahmanas and people like that, and he says that even this a glimpse of the holy name, meaning Nama Vasa, gives liberation. And he compares this to the dawning light of the sun. In the beginning of the day, there's darkness, and then there's the demoru, the twilight, the dawning twilight. The sun is below the horizon, but the light of the sun is in the sky. So even, he says, in the same way that the dawning light of the sun, this abhasa, makes the forest safe. At night, the forest is a dangerous place. It's got wild animals. It's got thieves, robbers, as they say in India, dacoits. And also it has Bhutas, pretas, pischachas, ghosts, hobgoblins, demons, and stuff, these things. So the forest is very dangerous. But just with the dawning light, it becomes safe. The thieves and the robbers, they go back to their hideouts, and the wild animals go into their caves, their dens. And we all know that Dracula has to go back into his coffin, and so on, the ghosts disappear, the demons and stuff. So it becomes safe. So he says, so in the same way that this dawning light of just the mere namabhasa, twilight, dawning twilight, makes the forest safe. So even just namabhasa destroys all sinful reaction. And the fruit of just this kind of chanting is liberation. Then when the pure name appears, there's prema. This is the description that he gives. And some impersonalists there got insulted that when they said that simply namabhasa gives mukti, because that's their highest goal, and he said going beyond that to Krishna prema. So we should see that just trying to give up offenses brings this result. And of course, those of us who are chanting with a vow, our 16 rounds a day, Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells us that to really engage in the process of anartha nirvritti, the first offense that we have to deal with is pramadaha, inattentiveness. He said it is from this offense that all the other offenses spring. It's like the soil from which they grow, inattentiveness. So if we're chanting japa, for example, we fix our mind on the holy name, and then our mind can wander. away. One time, as a new devotee, when I was still in graduate school, I brought my one of my best professors. He wanted to come and see the temple because I very strange. I was in a university, and I started to go to class in a dhoti and everything. In those days, devotees never wore regular clothes. So I showed up in the religion department one day with a dhoti and a shaved head on. Very shocked. But this Professor Burke was very interested. So he came to the temple, and we were chanting, I noticed that we were having kirtan in front of the deities. He was clapping his hands and chanting. And so I said to him, well, how did you like the chanting? He says, it was great. I got so many good ideas. He said, let's see. So somehow or other, you know, when you're chanting, your mind can go into a state where you're thinking so many things. You know. We should not do that. When the mind goes away from the holy name, you should bring it back. You should fix it on the holy name. When we just let it wander, or we're thinking of other things, and the mantra sounds like something like that, that's the offensive chanting. But if we're chanting and the mind goes away somehow or other, we find it's over there for some reason, bring it back. When it goes away, bring it back. That's clearing stage. And on that stage, we will begin to make advancement. We will see that lust, greed, anger disappear from the heart. We will begin to be able to hear the guidance from the Supersoul. The Supersoul is in our heart, always giving us spiritual direction to everybody, but most people are ignoring it. They've turned their back, they're not paying attention. So we start to pay attention, then we start to also get guidance from the Supersoul. We will feel that guidance. It is very encouraging. Then when the pure stage, when the sun is risen, when the pure name is there, then we also, like Narada Muni, you see directly of the Lord. Or even when you read Bhagavatam in that state, you see Krishna, as Prabhupada says, directly in the pages. Yeah. Krishna and Krishna's name are the same. So Krishna and Krishna's book. So this is the stage of Anarjana Vritti. We should not spend 40 years getting through this stage. We should try to progress very nicely. And be careful to avoid all kinds of offenses and sins, and then we will make progress like this. And you see how quickly Narada Muni did here. And so then he says, after this, Anarjana Vritti, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada calls it the diminishing of all unwanted habits. That's the anartha, something you don't want. Sins and offenses. Then the next thing is nishta. Translated as firm faith here, what does he say? He says standard faith in transcendental matters. Nishta means you're completely convinced. You may, when you hear Prabhupada lecturing and talking, he would often use the expression, we have to get fixed up in Krishna consciousness. This is nishta. When you just, nishta is not a very advanced stage, but when a person has attained nishta, very rarely that they ever fall down. Because you've made tangible advancement, and you are convinced about Krishna consciousness, you have even some preliminary, you have some experience of the the power of devotional service, when the modes of passion and the ignorance have become lowered, and the mode of goodness is becoming prominent, you're happy. The mode of goodness means you're happy. And that happiness sort of is independent of whatever happens to be going on in the world around you. It's the natural happiness of the, that comes from the mode of goodness. So you become quite, you'd rather be doing this. Well, that's the next stage. The next stage is then called ruchi, which means a taste. You have a taste for Krishna consciousness. In other words, given the choice between some material activity that might be attractive and Krishna consciousness, you would just rather do the Krishna conscious activity. We don't even have to preach to ourselves. No, you should be Krishna. You know, it's just a natural a taste. It's called ruchi. Ruchi has as its objects, the activities of Krishna consciousness. It's a taste for these activities. You like hearing Bhagavatam, you like kirtan, you like japa, you like whatever activity. Maybe you just really would rather do that than anything else. Here Prabhupada calls it, there is standard faith in transcendental matter, and this the taste for it increases in greater proportion. That's what he says for ruchi. This is this taste, the ruchi taste. Now that taste, so these are all kind of the beginning stages. Then the next stage is called asakti. Ruchi, the word asakti, he calls it attraction or attachment for Krishna. It's actually a very strong word. It means addiction. It's addiction for Krishna, asakti. Asakti, addiction. So ruchi has as its object the activities of devotional service, whereas asakti has Krishna as its object. Somehow or other, in the stage of a Krishna, the stage you become really obsessed with Krishna. One really becomes very interested in hearing about Krishna. In a particular form, really what happens is that you don't know why, for example, but whenever you think of Krishna in Vrindavan, you think of Krishna with Balaram and the cowherd boys, with certain devotees, or with his mother, or with the gopi. Some Krishna at a particular age and association with particular devotees. That kind, for some reason, you're just attracted to Krishna in that way, and in response to that form of Krishna, which is just sort of spontaneously becoming something you're obsessed with, or maybe Ramchandra or something, the Sringadev, something, there is that evokes the emotions become stronger and stronger, and that's when it becomes bhava. The stage of bhava is characterized here by astasattvika vikara, physical transformation. Then the emotion becomes so intense that, for example, the hair stands on end. Now you can also get intense feelings like that in the material world. At least for me, it's usually fear. You're walking along the road at night, and suddenly from very close by, there's a growling and barking of a dog, and I don't know where the dog is. your hair, at least my hair, stands on end and the goosebumps are there. You start to shake, you know. Because this very intense emotion causes these reactions. So this is bhava, except this is Krishna will call, this love for Krishna that causes these reactions. That's what happens. Or tears spring from the eyes, actually with great force. This is a description of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Rath Yatra, for example, that when he cried, the water was expressed from his eyes like shh, like a syringe, you know? Shh. It was so intense. And the goosebumps, what do you call that? The pores of the hairs stand up, or the hair stands up. Where there's hair, your hair is standing on end, and where there's no hair, it's just the skin pores, they become erect. And it said he looked like the silk cotton tree that has thorns. You know, it was so extreme. Mahaprabhu felt emotions so strong they would kill most of us. But he could do it. Oh, by the way, I mean, I saw this happen. So Prabhupada, it says that when this stage develops, these emotions tend to overwhelm devotees, and then they learn how to keep them inside. They are able not to let them be manifest. Otherwise, you couldn't function. Maybe you get taken to the mental hospital or something. Lord, the choking of the voice is another one. And so it says that Lord Chaitanya was trying to chant Jagannath, Jagannath, but he was saying Jagagaga, Jagagaga, Jagagaga. This is all described, you know. These are some of these. Anyway, in the New York temple, when Prabhupada came once, we were standing right behind him for greeting the deities. The curtains opened, he bowed down, he got up, and then he looked at Radha Govinda, and you saw the tears come out like this, and you could see them sprinkle on the floor. He just ignored it, went on, and all of us behind got to get down and taking the water of his tears and putting it on his head. You know, there was a little sideshow, Prabhupada, with the Tejanamrita. People, so Prabhupada, you know, once in a while you would see it like that. And sometimes people thought Prabhupada had a cold because of he was kind of like stuffed up and stuff like that, but it wasn't a cold. Anyway, this is, although we are given a warning, by the way, by Srila Prabhupada, that the real symptoms are eternal, internal rather, because these symptoms can be imitated by other people, and that we've seen also. I remember once we were in Vrindavan, and some sadhu or something was in front of the deities, and he fell on the ground and started yelling, howling, and stuff like that. And somebody went to Prabhupada in his room and said, "There's someone there who's in front of the deities, and he's lying and rolling on the ground, and like he's in ecstasy." And Prabhupada said, "Stop him! Stop him! Take him outside." So the devotees came and picked him up and took him out to the alleyway inside of the temple. And they told me that he kind of got up very indignantly and brushed himself off, lit a bitty and a cigarette, you know, and went away. So you find sometimes people are doing this, often, unfortunately, aided by marijuana and other things, they boost their ecstasy. So these are artificially induced. we're going to run out of time. So then, when Bhava becomes enhanced, enriched by various factors, this feeling from the basic feeling from Bhava becomes because the next stage is prema, and because rasa is manifest. That means this bhava becomes a major component of rasa, which is called stayi bhava, your permanent feeling. And then there are various kinds of supplementary feelings, transitory ecstasies, and so on, that intensify this. And as we'll see with Narada Muni, one thing that really intensifies this bhava is strong feelings of separation. In fact, separation is the reason for separation is that a parent may love the child very much, but when the child is away, then their attention, when they miss them, then their feelings increase. So the strong feelings are separation. So that after this bhava, then there is actual prema. And the text says, this is the krama, the chronological order in the appearance of prema in a devotee. This is the sequence. This, then this, then this, then this, then this, then this. One after another. So this is what we're seeing with Narada Muni. Prabhupada says, tears from the eyes of a devotee is an automatic reaction, meaning spontaneous. It just happens. So therefore, what you see in this stage, the Lord appeared in his heart, and that appearance immediately evokes prema. So, any questions or comments? Yeah.
I'm wondering, the stages, how fluid are they? Because you mentioned that on the level of a shakti, a devotee may feel attracted to certain pastimes of Krishna or certain relationships with them. How fluid is this attraction in a shakti, and how much is that related to the feelings bhava and prema in the rasa the devotee may develop later?
I don't understand. No, not it's not ashakti, it's asakti. There's no there's no little long mark over the accent mark. It's asakti. I don't know quite.
These stages, clear separated stages, or are these stages fluid?
Oh, they're fluid. Yeah, you can even at an earlier stage, you can get some foretaste of a later stage. This is the general progress, but sometimes a little more foretaste will be there. Yeah, so you should think when you're on the stage of anartha nirvritti, you can have on your better days. You may really get a little bit of ruchi, and these things will increase more and more. So it's gradual. The stages kind of seamlessly lead one to the other, and this becomes prominent. And the others, it's really kind of interesting because Let me just get this up for you. There is from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he gives stages of anartha nirvritti, because the advancement is the disappearance of anartas, and he distinguishes there four kinds of anartas. Those that arise from past sins, duskritta; those that arising from previous pious work, sukritta; aparad, offenses; and anarthas arising from bhakti. These are the four he has. This is in Madhurya Kandambani. And then he also has five different degrees of cancelling them out, nullification, eradification. Ekadesha Vartani is partial, and then Bahudesha, pervasive, Prayaki, which means almost complete, Purna, complete. But then there's one more stage, Atyantiki, absolute. I made a little chart of this. This is, when he discusses the stages at which the eradication takes place, the anartas from past pious work, sukriti, doesn't even consider them. That means, you know, you may have some attachment to something that you have gotten from a pious activity. Those gone. But the anartha, what is the anartha from bhakti? That you become a devotee, you may get some fame, you may get some recognition, and so on. So that, at the stage of bhajana kriya, that is partially eradicated. By the time one gets to nishta, it's complete. And when you get to ruchi, that kind of anartha is over. Like, for example, the desire for fame, recognition, whatever, lots of donations. I don't know whatever it may be that you. The anartas from duskritta, that is to say, sinful activities, at jet bhajana kriya, they're almost completely eradicated. At nishta, they're complete, and they're absolute at asakti. The third, the anarthas that are from offenses, at bhajana kriya, they're just beginning. At nishta, you're only up to pervasive, the second stage of eradication. At bhava, they're almost complete, whereas the anarthas from sinful activities are almost complete at bhajana kriya. So for aparad, and then at prema, they're complete. But it says he adds another stage after prema, association of the Lord, then they're absolute. That's what I, you know, you want to see, I made a little chart from his writings, as you can see how this goes. So you can see that that even anartha nirvritti, although it's a particular stage, really it goes all the way throughout the whole process. the anarthas from bhakti and from sinful activities are complete, but the aparads are still, some is still there. The offenses. So that's how it works. Anything else?
On this level of attraction, is that an indication to one's said that devotee develops like an addiction for a certain form of the Lord.
No, that
is that an indication towards prema?
If you're talking about asakti, that's for a particular form of law of the Lord. And as I understand it, first you become attracted to Krishna. You're attracted to Krishna, but I said it's not just a general, it's very specific. It becomes more and more concretely specific. Krishna at a certain age, Krishna with certain devotees, Krishna in a certain form. And you become obsessed, and naturally there are feelings that are evoked from thinking of Krishna in this way. Those feelings become more and more prominent, and that becomes bhava. So the idea of becoming interested or really obsessed with Krishna in a certain way becomes first, and the feelings then go along with it. Because that's the stage, first asakti, then bhava.
That's already a clear indication of one's relationship with Krishna.
That it becomes revealed. You start to find out. And that attraction for Krishna, you know, you really may, the main component may be one of Krishna's associates that you become extremely attracted to, and the service that that associate does. That's also a part of it. Yeah?
Sometimes it is very difficult to bring the minds back when you are chanting, especially if you are working outside and you have to think so many other things to do it. And how do we really get this strength to bring the mind back and be focused when you are chanting, especially if you work outside?
Well, say you are trying to get some physical strength and you're lifting a weight. How do you get strength? It's hard, right? But you just keep doing it. It's practice. Abhyasa. The Sanskrit word for practice is abhyasa. Because the same question you're asking is asked by Arjuna. When Krishna says in the sixth chapter, the mind is very difficult to control, it's like controlling the wind, it's so hard. How can you do it? I think what you're recommending is impractical. And Krishna says, yeah, I understand about the mind. I'm perfectly aware of that, he says. But you can do it. And he says, there's two things. Abhyasa. And vairagya, by and abhyasa is practice, and vairagya is detachment. So practice means repetition. You do it over and over again. You want to learn a skill. You want to learn how to play the madanga. You have to practice. So any skill that we want to become good at requires practice. And practice means repetition. And when we are going to practice to get a skill, usually we have to kind of make a discipline for ourselves. This is the time I will practice something 1 hour a day, and I'll do it every day at this time, or something like that. So it's easier in the temple. We have time for japa in the morning. So you have to arrange your life. If we are living outside and we have work to do, so that you can get japa in. What Prabhupada did, because he for many years he was a householder, he worked. He would divide up his japa. He would 4 times a day he would chant 4 rounds. So my suggestion is, first of all, make sure you get up early enough to at least chant 4 rounds in the morning. First thing, get up, wash out your mouth, brush your teeth, wash your face, don't even change it, sit down and chant before anything else happens, and then go on. Four rounds, you know, maybe a half an hour. Depends upon your speed. And you try, you know, you try, your mind wanders, you bring it back. In this matter, you just have to not quit. You just have to be persistent. You'll have good days, you'll have bad days. You don't know why. Sometimes it's easier, sometimes it's hard, but you just keep trying. And then, of course, it was a little easier in India where they had long lunch breaks. you had 2 hours for lunch or something in the old days. Now they give you 20 minutes or something. But you have to kind of find something during the day to be able to chant some more rounds. And then when you get home, that has to be the other thing you do in the evening is finish your rounds. That may eliminate the possibility of sense gratification, but okay. Then you have to choose. Shall I watch a TV show or shall I chant my rounds? You have to make up your mind what you want. So something like that, you have to make a schedule, a practical schedule, arrange your life in such a way that you will be able to chant. And you should really try to give quality time to your chanting. It is not good to chant while you're driving the car. If you're going to work by a train or a bus or something, you can chant then. I find I have in my bead bag that I have made, I have a little pocket. And in this pocket, there are these little earplugs. And this is very useful for chanting in the urban environment. Of course, when you're walking, you have to be careful. Because you won't hear cars coming and things like that. But that's also sometimes very helpful. So you can find something. And if we're sincere and serious, Krishna will make arrangement that you can find the time. And then you have other devotees to consult about practical advice. Another thing is, I suggest that you make a special space. Sometimes at home you'll have room for a little, bhajan room, a little temple room. Some people don't have that space. Get a little rug, a special rug or a mat, and then put it down for your chanting on. You make a space with a little rug and sit on the rug. It changes everything. And then maybe you have a Harinam chadar and you put that on. So you've changed a little bit. You must have a picture somewhere, something to the environment helps. Here we have a wonderful temple room, but you can come and take advantage, that's good. But at home you have to make something. If you have enough room, a closet or something, you can make a little temple room. Otherwise you have to have the ability to take a multi-functioning room and turn it with a rug and a picture and maybe light some incense or something. They're practical things to do. Okay. Yeah.
You mentioned that Prabhupada was chanting four times, four rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Does this mean that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur already compromised with the 64 rounds?
In the Gaudiya Mat, 64 rounds were for people who stayed in the temple and didn't have much else to do. The preachers who went out and did things or had some engagement, 16 rounds, and those that were extremely busy, 4 rounds. That was his lowest standard. That's why you see now, sometimes our people from the Gaudiya Mat, they all say 4 rounds. But Prabhupada, whose instructions I accept, because he's the one who spread Krishna consciousness, he just said 16. At first he told the devotees 64, you know, whoa, impossible, you know. So slowly, you know, he said 16 and he left it at that. Because you can see what happened. I think Srila Prabhupada learned from the Gaudiya Mat and what things did, and he saw that as soon as there was allowance for four rounds, you know, that became gradually became the standard for almost everybody. 64 rounds if you can do it, but you know it takes 8 hours, and so the people that were preachers and really busy and distributing books or giving lectures all the time, he said 16. And then even Prabhupada, you know, under an emergency condition, when he wanted the Juhu temple built, and then people were engaged intensely in construction and it was all day long and there were deadlines, he let them not chant their rounds. But then some of the people had trouble getting back into 16 rounds after it was over, I have to say. But he gave him a pass on it for a while because it was like an emergency condition. But then in another place, I don't know where it was, but Prabhupada was at the temple for a Rath Yatra. And the day after Rath Yatra, he didn't see any devotees around. And he said, "Where are all the devotees?" "Oh, Prabhupada, well, getting ready for Rath Yatra, they couldn't chant their rounds for a few days, so now they're making them up." And he said, "Better not have the Rath Yatra," is what he said. So sometimes emergencies, and Prabhupada said, if we have a vow to chant 16 rounds and we don't complete it one day, we have to make it up the next day. But then I've known people who, you know, they went to India finally, and you know, when they got there, they kept track of how many rounds they missed, and then they had, you know, 128 rounds to finish or something. It's not really. We should try to get as much control of our environment that we can do it. I mean, things happen. You know, you have your day planned out and some emergency comes up, but basically we should take this vow very seriously. And the Prabhupada said it's the most important. It's the most important one we do. So that's how it happened. So Prabhupada was a householder, he had a job, so it was 16 for him. That was the standard. And I'm sure when he took sannyas, he increased and did more. But then if he was really busy translating, he probably went down to 16 again. But I don't know for sure. Anything else? But he did mention this 4, 4, 4, and 4 when he was doing business. And when he was doing business, he also did more than doing business. Practically, when he was in Mumbai, he was managing the Bombay Temple. Anything else? Other questions? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.